This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. Former U.S. House Speaker John McCormick has been called, quote, the most important political leader that most people have never heard of. He had a long and distinguished career as a House member from Massachusetts. How long? Here's a list of the presidents that served during McCormick's tenure. Calvin Coolidge, Herbert Hoover, Franklin Roosevelt, Harry Truman, Dwight Eisenhower, John F. Kennedy, Lyndon Johnson, and Richard Nixon. He spent over 40 years in Congress and was House Speaker during the turbulent political times between 1962 and 1971. UVM political science professor Garrison Nelson has just written a comprehensive biography of McCormick, and he joins us now to discuss this fascinating political leader. Garrison, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Always a pleasure, Bob.
Garrison, you spent over 20 years researching the career of John McCormick. A lot of folks listening right now might not be very familiar with his political career. Just to start off with, briefly tell us, what do you find so interesting about this man?
The fact that no one ever wrote a biography about this guy. The fact that nobody knows who he is. This book was turned down by 11 publishers on the grounds that nobody knew who he was. And it was absolutely fascinating to get those responses. And I realized that the reason there were no biographies about him was because he didn't want one. And he did everything in his power to make sure he didn't get one. And here are some of the steps he took. He told his staff, nobody is ever to write anything about, you know, our time together. Nobody. Made that very clear. Two, they sanitized the papers. His papers were at Boston University, my alma mater, and they've been sanitized. There's virtually nothing before 1950, for example, in his papers. Lots of birthday cards he sent to his wife, but not much in the way of real substantive materials.
Garrison, during the early part of his congressional career when Franklin Roosevelt is president, John McCormick is a pretty enthusiastic New Deal Democrat, isn't he? What does that tell us about the way he viewed the role of government?
A very activist. His family grew up in tremendous poverty. As I say, he had 8 siblings. You know, 5 died young by the time he was 21. 5 of them had deceased. He saw government as a very positive influence in terms of providing housing, in terms of Social Security and Medicare. He was on the Ways and Means Committee that wrote Social Security in 1935. His amendments were carried in the 1939 version of Social Security. He was Speaker of the House during the Medicaid debates in the mid-60s. The largest housing project in New England was built in South Boston, and at one point was even named for John McCormick's mother. So grueling poverty that he grew up with, that the family was forced him to drop out of school after the 8th grade, for example. That was the highest level of education he possessed was 8th grade, because he had to go sell newspapers, you know, for the family and work as a messenger boy for Western Union. So he knew real poverty. I mean, a lot of these politicians are talking about how poor they were. John's stories of poor boy were absolutely true and were not sort of exaggerated in order to make people feel sorry for them. Absolutely true. And he felt very akin to poor boys. So if you wanted to succeed with John McCormick, you gave him a poor boy story, and he would, move, heaven and earth to help you out.
Garrison, there was a lot of controversy in 1944 as FDR was seeking a fourth term in office about who would be his vice presidential running mate. It was a very important decision because FDR was not in good health at all. What role does McCormick play in this debate?
Just to show you how bad it was, days before the convention met, Dr. Frank Leahy of the Boston Leahy Clinic, which he founded, was one of two doctors, went to meet with Roosevelt's doctor, looked at the x-rays, did extensive physical examination of FDR, and Leahy concluded that FDR was going to die. And he said he's not going to survive a fourth term. And there should be great care, devoted to picking a vice president. And this is in the letter. Now, this is a letter he wrote to himself, which was locked up for years, given to his secretary. She put it in her safe deposit box, and it was hidden for years until about 4 or 5 years ago when the Boston Globe released it. And FDR's private doctor, McIntyre, would not tell Roosevelt of these results. and concealed it from FDR himself. So FDR goes to the convention, and there's concern about Henry Wallace. Henry Wallace is FDR's vice president in the third term, that Wallace has become much too close to lefty influences in New York, and they want to dump him. At this point, the South and the city Democrats now pretty much control the way in which the Democratic Party is functioning, and they both want to get rid of Henry Wallace, who's originally from Iowa, so he doesn't appeal to the city guys, and he's a northerner, doesn't appeal to the southern guys, and he's a liberal, and doesn't part of the party's conservatives, so they want to remove him. And McCormick plays a very important role in this. He is chairman of the platform committee that year, and he helps to get his poker pal nominated for vice president. His poker pal is Harry Truman. I asked McCormick one time in one of my two interviews with him about poker pals. So I said, where was Sam Rayburn? And McCormick said, Rayburn didn't play poker. He made the sandwiches.
And Sam Rayburn was Speaker of the House for much of the 40s and 50s.
17 years, longest ever.
And during that time, John McCormick, for a large part of that period, is House Majority Leader. You write extensively about what you call, quote, the Austin-Boston connection. What was that all about?
And these are sort of the moderate Southern Democrats, you know, like Rayburn, and the urban Catholic and ethnic Democrats from the cities, like John McCormick. And they create this alliance of the Austin-Boston connection, and they prevent the New Deal from being overturned, from being rolled back. And this is their key role during the Roosevelt years. Later, when the Democratic Party is riven by race issues, you know, the Dixiegrat walkout in 1948, and Strom Thurmond, before Southern states to vote against Harry Truman, it becomes clear that race politics has really manifested itself because so many blacks decide to leave the South and move to the cities. And they move to the big cities, you know, Baltimore, New York, Chicago, Detroit. And those, the big cities, basically carry the big states. And if you can win the big cities, you win the big states. You win the big states, you win the Electoral College, you win the presidency. So one part is to keep the blacks, you know, connected to the Democratic Party. And then the other part is, of course, but you have to deal with the Southerners because of the seniority system. The Southerners control the committees because they've got the seniority to become the chairs of these major committees. So it's a very clear, you know, balancing act. How do you keep them together? So in 1949, John McCormick will put a racist by the name of Bill Colmer on the Rules Committee, back on the Rules Committee. He'd been knocked out in the earlier Congress, over Sam Rayburn's objection. He was a Mississippi racist. But John McCormick also steps aside so the first African-American, Bill Dawson from Chicago, can become the first chair of a congressional committee. So McCormick is balancing, you know, the segregationists on one side and the blacks on the other. And this is what the Austin-Boston connection starts to doing during the 50s and 60s, is trying to keep these two discordant elements in the tent. And it eventually, of course, will fail with Nixon creating the Southern Strategy and basically moving, you know, Southern Democrats into the Republican Party.
Garrison, some House speakers are known as governing with an iron fist, a very top-down political process. Others employ a more collaborative style. Where do you put John McCormick on this scale?
Very collaborative. McCormick had never been a committee chair. Rayburn had been a committee chair, a very important committee, the Commerce Committee, and wrote major pieces of legislation, the Securities and Exchange Act, for example, and final electrification issues and so forth. So Rayburn had been a committee chair, and so committee chairs, you know the system better than non-committee chairs. And John never chaired a committee, never chaired a standing committee, put it that way. Did a couple of select committees, but never a standing committee. So John was much more collaborative, much more collegial. He was not heavy-handed at all. His worst insult for a member was, "I hold the member in minimum high regard." That was the extent of his insulting of anyone. And so he was perceived as relatively weak.
Garrison, there's an interesting quote of John McCormick's. He said, "If I were given a choice, I would rather be known as a good man than a great man." What do you think he meant by that?
Exactly that. He did not want to call attention to himself. He did not try to grab center stage. He was really saw his role as keeping the House together during these tough times and these discordant wings of the Democratic Party. That's where he saw himself, as being a good person. never owned a home, lived in a second floor walk up on Columbia Road in Dorchester, and stayed in the same hotel room for 42 years with the fixtures never being changed until John and Harriet departed the room.
Garrison Nelson is a political science professor at UVM. He's the author of a detailed and fascinating political biography of former U.S. House Speaker John McCormick. Garrison, many thanks for being on the program today.
Glad to do it, Bob.